Welcome to the Mattcast. This is a podcast that strives to bring the church world and the art world closer together. I am Matt Anderson, and glad you can join us today. This is the final of three episodes in which we have been discussing our artistic identity. And we spent the previous two episodes examining who we are not. That we are first not victims, and that secondly, we are not what we do. So today, I want to get to the heart of who we really are. To do that, I want to tell a story from my life about one very key weekend that forever cemented the issue of identity for me. A little bit of background, it was about 17 years ago. And I had really hit the wall professionally. I had left youth ministry and moved to be the executive director of a nonprofit. And it was, they were definitely needing something to reverse course, but I was unable to really affect change. And when I walked away from that, I was unemployed in my mid-30s and living in my brother's basement. This is not the future one plans for oneself, as they say. I felt a little bit like George Costanza, I have to admit. So I remember a particular weekend that my brother and his family were going to be gone, and I was going to have the house to myself. And I just sensed, because for months, I had just been trying to find the Lord and figure out where he had my life and did he still love me and care. And I thought, Lord, I just need to be inspired this weekend. I just need a reminder of who I am and what you have for me. So I went to the library because I didn't have any money, and I asked the Lord, what movies should I check out from the library this weekend on this quest? And both actually were movies I had watched before. It had been a while, and I was certainly at a different station in life when I had seen them previously. And I want to use these two films to show you how the Lord constructed my identity, or reconstructed it, that weekend. The first film was Chariots of Fire. If you haven't seen the film, I can't recommend it more highly. But in case you're not aware, it won the Academy Award for Best Picture in 1981. And it's based on the true story of two runners in Great Britain in the earlier part of the 20th century. The two runners were Harold Abrams and Eric Little. And as you watch the film, you see that each of them has a different identity or sort of reason for being. So when we meet Harold Abrams at the beginning of the film, we see him arriving at Cambridge for the school year, and he has something to prove. Or at least he thinks so. His family is Jewish. They had emigrated to England a few decades before. And it appears that they have constantly had to deal with anti-Semitism, even there in Great Britain, which we haven't always associated Great Britain with that, but it was certainly there. And of course, the young Abrams encounters it himself from the staff at Cambridge. Now, Abrams is a good runner, and he sets about to impress his peers. He is going to impress everyone around him and the faculty, the staff, everyone. And he is demanding that he be taken seriously. He primarily does this at a challenge that Cambridge University has. It's called the Trinity Great Court Run, And this is where, and I believe it was at noontime, they would have to run around the college courtyard at noon. And so the clock would strike and you would hear it, the first tone. And then you had to run around the courtyard of the university before the clock struck 12. It was a very difficult challenge, one that had been completed very few times, and he does it. He also achieves a bit of an undefeated string of victories in different national running competitions. But here's the thing, it's not enough for him. He is completely dissatisfied. He is unhappy. So he realizes the only way he can truly achieve is by winning a gold medal at the upcoming 1924 Olympics in Paris. The chip on this guy's shoulder arrives 5 minutes before he does. This is just the way he is. He runs angry. He lives angry. He achieves angry. And even when he wins, he looks as if he has lost. And even later, when he actually he wins the 100 meters at the Olympics, when it's all done and he's by himself holding his medal, he looks lost and unfulfilled. And as I'm watching this play out on the screen, I was reminded of the great quote by Oscar Wilde that there are two great tragedies in life: not getting what one wants and getting what one wants. And Harold Abrams had gotten what he wanted, and it still was a tragedy. As I watched the film, I realized I was him. I was doing life angry. I was mad at the system. I was mad at the Lord. That's really what it was. I was angry that I had been dealt a bad hand in life. And that carried into ministry. I had a chip on my shoulder. I was jealous of people in college who were pastors' kids, who seemed to get preferential treatment because they were known by the administration. They had familiar last names, so they were given opportunities that I wasn't. I felt like I had something to prove. And I went all out like Abrams to show the world how competent I was, how much I deserved attention, how much I deserved applause. And I was largely successful, by the way, in doing that. I mean, there was almost no hurdle I couldn't get over. I got attention from doing that, but guess what? It wasn't enough. I'd experienced the Oscar Wilde quote. And if we live and work out of a false identity, even when we arrive, quote unquote, it will only be hollow and we will be left asking, now what? I think this is why so many artists and people who are successful self-harm. Artists think, boy, if I could just get published, if I could just get my work out there, if I can make a living from what I do, if I could have it show and people see it and be impressed, that will bring me what I want. But guess what? It doesn't. And so they start to drink themselves to death. They start to use all kinds of harmful substances. They form all kinds of addictions that slowly rot out their soul. And I realized that night that I had been living the Harold Abrams life. No wonder I had lost who I was. Then there's Eric Little, just this Scotsman who can run like the wind. And he and his family are missionaries to China. In this movie, they're home on furlough, and they're going around the country and taking some time off. And while home, Eric is using his ability to run to also bring the gospel to people. He does running exhibitions that he always wins, by the way, and then invites people to a service later where he preaches the word. And his ability has given him an audience, as we have seen in our culture. But with the attention, when he starts to get all of this acclaim and attention from people all over the United Kingdom, his sister becomes more and more concerned because she's wondering if all of this fame is going to go to his head. Is he going to abandon his calling? Especially when he gets approached about running in the Olympics. She's thinking he's going to start compromising his values in order to be famous. And she does not keep that silent. And in my favorite scene of the film, Eric pulls his sister aside, Sister Jenny, takes her outdoors, and he informs her that, yes, he will be returning to China. And of course, she is overjoyed and she embraces him. And he says, "But I have a lot of running to do first." And now again, she's concerned. But it's his next statement that shows the difference between Abrams and Little. He says in the film, quote, "I believe that God made me for a purpose, but he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure." And as I watched this, I kept asking myself, which of these two men am I most like? I knew the answer, and the answer wasn't pretty. Here was a simple Scotsman who was doing what he was meant to do because it gave God pleasure. Here was a man who had nothing to prove to anyone but follow God's plan just for the sheer joy of it. Does that describe you? You see, he didn't need anything or want anything but God's smile over him. And isn't that what we should strive for? After watching the film, I realized that every title in life can be taken away from us, except one. Some of us, we are sons and daughters right now, but our parents, if we live long enough, will die before us. We could be a spouse, but marriages end sometimes tragically. We can even be a parent, and sadly, children can be lost. We can be working all kinds of jobs and occupations and then fired and let go. All the titles of life are up for grabs except for one. I am a child of God. Do you realize that is the one title in your life that can never be taken from you? Even if you don't believe him, even if you spit in his eye, even if you turn from him and follow your own way, you never stop being God's child. This is the number one unchanging building block of our identity. I am God's child. Do you need to lose weight? Looking to take off those quick 10 pounds to make you look your best for the high school reunion? Or are you morbidly obese and a high risk for diabetes or heart disease? Then Flabanex is for you. It's the new Diet Wonder Drug. We think it will make a difference in your life. Why don't you call Flabanex today? In some patients, Flabanex has been known to cause night sweats, high blood pressure, severe backaches, cerebral hemorrhage, vital meningitis, leprosy, dropsy, rickets, Lyme disease, and hypothermia. Women in pregnancy should not take Flabanex. Men between the ages of 14 and 87 who occasionally have stuffed nose, fever, coughing, or headaches should not take Flabanex. Those who have had a common cold within the last 15 years should not take Flabanex. Flabanex may result in vomiting, severe abdominal pain, skin lesions, loss of hair and or limbs, jaundice, or depletion of muscle tissue. If one or more of these symptoms occur, please contact your physician immediately. Flabanex should not be taken by anyone who operates heavy machinery or is required to think in any capacity. In rare cases, Flabanex has been known to cause bubonic plague, whooping cough, goiters, elephantitis, and occasional occasionally the growth of a hump on the patient's back. Flavonex should not be taken by anyone who has breathed on their own for more than 10 minutes of their life. Flavonex, it will change everything. We'd bet your life on it. So in my quest to have my identity reconstructed over that weekend, the Lord led me to two films. The first one I've told you about, Chariots of Fire, really centered me on the number one building block of identity, that I am God's child, and nothing changes that. The second movie, and I'm going to use a lyric from the Hillsong worship song called Who You Say I Am. And if you've not had the privilege of hearing that song, I think it's the best song about our identity that I've ever heard in church, called Who You Say I Am. But it's kind of taken from that song. And I think the other building block is, I am who God says I am. Because he has more to say over us than the fact that we're his child, which is enough, by the way. But there is more that he says to us. But we are who he says we are, and not who anyone else says. And the film that I think crystallized that for me was Dances with Wolves. That's the film, came out in 1989, I want to say, with Kevin Costner, again, an Oscar winner for Best Picture. And I'd seen the movie a few times previously, but when I viewed it that weekend, I saw it in a whole new light, because here's this man that Kevin Costner plays. His name is John Dunbar. He is a Civil War soldier, and in the midst of the fog of war, he doesn't want to live anymore. He cannot handle the brutality of it, and who could? And so he rides out on his own in what could only be called a suicide mission. And he literally gets on his horse and rides in front of the Confederate line, just hoping someone will shoot him and kill him. Well, it kind of boomerangs on him, because not only is he not shot, but he ends up inspiring the Union Army, and they surge and end up winning the victory. And he becomes the inspiration and gets promoted. So that didn't quite work out for him the way it did. But here he was, this soldier, and he could be assigned pretty much anywhere. He ends up getting assigned to this remote fort in the West. And upon arrival, it takes him a few hours to realize there's no one else there. It's only him. And he doesn't know why the fort has been abandoned. He doesn't know what happened. He's just following orders. And so he sets the place up. And the whole time he's a soldier, he just feels like he doesn't fit. It literally is a misfit for him. But it's all he knows. And as he goes through his process of establishing the fort and getting it up and running again, he begins to encounter the local Indian population in different fashion. And he begins to really take a liking. Something within him just springs up and shows him that, wow, there's something I've been missing my whole life. And he starts to really connect with the Native Americans to the point where he eventually becomes a part of their tribe. And they give him a name. He goes from being John Dunbar to being the name Dances with Wolves. And then it's his, the story goes of of him assimilating into the tribe and then finally kind of cutting the cord on his past, but the past is not quite through with him, and the efforts to free him so that he can finally be with his what becomes his family, his tribe. And as I watched that film, I thought, yeah, there have just been so many ways that I felt like I don't quite fit. I don't really fit this ministry thing as well as other people do. Because I never really had an aspiration to be a lead pastor. And again, most folks in my world, that's kind of what you're shooting for eventually. You want that, whether it's you take over an established church or you begin a new one. But that never was a thing for me. And it's boggled the minds of my friends. Lord bless them. And so there are so many times I felt like, man, I mean, I love being in the ministry, but I don't quite fit the way others do. And watching that film allowed me to have the freedom to say, that's okay. Not everybody does. In fact, I think there are more people who really don't fit, but they kind of don't admit it. Because the consequences of that choice become, now who will I be? For John Dunbar, it was literally changing his whole life. It was going from everything he knew, military life, civilian life, and moving in with this Native American tribe and learning their language, I believe it's Lakota, and being a part of everything they do, including marriage. It was a whole different world and a whole different name. So making a decision like that, and there are many artists in the sound of my voice who have had to make that choice because they feel like they don't really fit. They're not corporate type people. They're not really 9-to-5 kind of folks. And it's tough because they might be surrounded by that and they can feel like they're the oddball. But then when you come back to the fact that I am who God says I am, not my family heritage, not the family business, not even my well-meaning friends who have observed me, they can weigh in all they like, but I am who God says I am. And if the Lord says, here's the direction I want you to go, then that's what we do. Now, keep in mind, we don't become married to that because the Lord can turn us on a dime to another thing and say, okay, now you're going to do this. So we never really become what we do, as we said in the last episode. It's what God says we do and who God says we are that becomes our identity. You know, maybe the Lord wants to even give you a new name. Maybe as you walk through life with Jesus, maybe there will be just a private thing you have with him, a name that he gives you that's just between you and him. I think there need to be things that are just between us that nobody else knows. After all, he is the Savior, and he is the one who defines us and calls us. Have you given him the chance to do that? If you feel like you're a bit of a misfit, or it just doesn't seem to jibe like with everyone else, maybe it's coming back to him and saying, Lord, you tell me who I am. Nobody else gets that right. But he has the right to do it. And we have the obligation to ask him. We are who he says we are. Nothing more and nothing less. And from that, my fellow creatives, we can make things and we can design, we can compose, we can write, we can paint so that others will see that the identity of our art does not come from us and it doesn't come from those around us. It only comes from him. Well, we appreciate you being a part of the MacCast. Our music is by Sound of Fusion. We hope to see you again soon. This has been a production of Monumental Ministries. For more info about our books and resources, go to mattministry.com. And thanks for having me over. I had a wonderful time.